The world is evolving at a faster pace than ever before, and as we begin the path to recovery after worldwide disruption, this podcast explores how design industries can adapt to changing expectations and create a better future for both business and consumers. I'm Carla Bizzarchi, CEO of WGSN, and your host this week. You're listening to Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast. This week, it's time once more to turn the spotlight on a brand, business, or individual leading the way in some of the fastest growing trend areas impacting design industries today. In today's episode, I speak to the CEO and founder of fashion textile disruptor Bolt Threads, Dan Widmeyer, with a particular focus on the company's revolutionary new non-leather Mylo. We are joined by WGSN's Head of Materials and Textiles, Helen Palmer, to talk sustainability, industry change, and innovation. So Dan, why don't you kick things off? Fascinating reading about what has come out of Bolt Threads, but can you just cast your mind back to 2009 when you founded the company? What was the mission then? And also, what was the kind of driving force behind this huge kind of alternate universe that you were moving into?
Yeah, I think it's a long time ago now. We're, 11, 12 years later? But a fantastic question, and thank you for having me on to share the story. We started the company, three of us, out of a science lab. We're all a bunch of PhD nerds. We are not from the fashion industry. Maybe we know. I wouldn't even argue I'm an expert now. I know a little bit. I've learned. I'm a pretty quick study, I think. But we saw a world where in 2009... we thought climate change was to some degree inevitable, right? Humanity can bend that curve, but it was a bad bet to say that we were just going to turn off all our carbon emitting everything in 2010. And that was going to have predictable consequences. But not in the way that most people care about in the short term, right? I can't tell you what the carbon dioxide in this room is right now. Maybe you guys can figure it out in your rooms, but I'm not very good at that. It's odorless, colorless. But if you believe it's going to go up, it's going to have predictable secondary impacts. And 10 years later, we actually see these sea level rise. Okay, maybe the least visible so far. It's coming. Drought, flooding, wildfire season. Northern California here has been terrible the last several years for wildfires. And the prediction was that that was going to lead to things that people who aren't paying attention to carbon are going to notice day to day, and they're going to demand action because it's impacting their lives. And you know how many environmentalists we've minted here in California every wildfire season the last 4 years when our kids have to wear masks and we're all stuck inside? And there was a horrible day last year where it looked like it was night all day while we were all locked inside for the pandemic. Like, that changed a lot of opinions. And the bet for Bolt Threads was there's going to be big challenges for humanity because of that, but there's also going to be really big opportunities for the people who can help create solutions to the problem. And at Bolt, we had a vision of creating solutions for materials in particular, because it's one of these things that's ubiquitous, a big chunk of the problem, and it's hard to replace. It requires a new kind of technology, new kind of supply chain. It's a thorny problem. And somewhat self-servingly, we're a bunch of biologists, and we could point to a really good working model of how materials could be different and be circular, and it was the 4 billion years of life on Earth. And so we said, look, there's 4 billion years of blueprints, and we begin this gift to read the DNA that encodes the blueprints from this technology where actually a Nobel Prize was awarded this year for the folks who invented this modern kind of sequencing. What if we could say we can find the stuff, we can figure out what Bolt can do as a way to make it commercial, and then serve that to consumers to be a solution to this problem? And in particular, for a lot of reasons, we were really in love with the consumer market, the things we wear on our bodies all day. We think it's an underserved market. That may not be true today. We can talk about that later, about how big the market for sustainability and fashion has gotten. But like, all our engineering buddies would make fun of us about like, oh, fashion, like, that's a real discipline for engineering. But in our opinion, it's like anything that impacts every single human on the planet from a sustainability angle is massive. It's just by definition massive. And the fact that everyone made fun of us was a sign that it was underserved. And so it also doesn't hurt that my wife's a fashion designer. And so, we put all these things together and said, that's the market we want to serve. It's about 2% of global GDP, and it has to change. And it's not built to change. That's the other thing. I mean, you guys know this as well as anybody, right? It's not an industry that's built on deep innovation. Much to my actual surprise, I'm not joking here when I say this, I expected to find a room full of like chemical engineers, chemists, biologists, and physicists hiding in the back of every brand doing the innovation for the future. And it took me like 3 years of realizing that didn't exist to be like, wait, that's not hiding. They're not just joking. It's not hiding in the back. They're not doing anything here. Oh my God, we have to do more.
Dan, first of all, we love anybody who thinks that fashion can change the world. You know, you're preaching to the converted on that front. But it is interesting for an industry that is so creative and so forward thinking, there has been that lack of innovation. And what we seem to see now is everyone's suddenly catching up and is super excited about being at the forefront of that. The brands that have taken their time are realizing that they need to catch up. You've got this huge push from consumers. You're finally getting governments putting legislation in. But although there's a lot of talk, the action is getting there. There's still a long way to go, which I think is why, you know, we've been so excited about what we've seen coming out of Bolt Threads. Now, you said that, you know, not very fashionable. And as someone who has now, well, feels like she's been in lockdown, I don't know, it's 14, 15 months, feels like about 5 years, who basically lives in leggings and slippers. I'm not feeling particularly fashionable myself. But the partnerships that you've come up with, and especially with the new Unleather, am I allowed to call it new? It's been around for a couple of years, but the products that are just coming out right now, super high-end fashionable. Is that, was that part of the plan? Or is this a way of just, you know, getting those big headlines that you hope will then filter down to the rest of the industry?
No, I think when you look at how products are launched in this industry, I mean, I would argue, I'm not an expert, but I've studied it a lot at this point. The way products are launched in this industry, I think you need to find the people who are authentically committed to change, because this is a really big change. This is not a small change. This is not a new inspiration that sweeps through the trend world of the industry. You know, this is like, we sit here and talk all day about, you know, morphology of hyphae and web geometries and molecular, you know, changes to cells. Like, it's just a lexicon that's just not, just it just doesn't exist in this industry. And it's part of why it's like, in some ways, it's taken it's sweeping the industry. The challenge we saw when we started the company was one of, there's a vast mismatch in timescale. I mean, you guys know this better than anyone. A season in fashion is a big deal. And, you know, that's what, 13 weeks? Maybe for a brand who's got two seasons a year, you get, you know, you're 26 weeks. A short time in science, one thesis for a graduate student is 6 years. Like, that's a reasonable quanta of time to make a small improvement. And so that's part of, like, I look at Bolt, we've been around 10 years. I think of Milo, we launched, we announced it with Stella McCartney, like, what, 2018? It feels like an eternity ago, but in the like realistic expectations of this kind of technology to come to this industry, it's blink of an eye. And so in many ways, like I always lament a little bit when I talk to folks. I'm like, hey, you know, we're doing some great stuff at Bolt. The vision is to do many materials. You know, Milo has really just eaten our focus recently. But you know, unfortunately and fortunately, we're the category leader. Like, I kind of wish this whole category was way bigger than it is today and that we'd pushed it way further, but we haven't yet. And part of the strategy here for us, especially with Milo, is find the people, because it's so new, who are authentically demonstrating a commitment to sustainability, a sustainability in new technology and change. And there are little pockets of that. I think, in my opinion, the most visible examples of bringing new technology to the market in a serious way, I think it starts with Adidas. I think they have a great track record of, you can point to other partners they've worked with to bring a material innovation or a technology innovation into the product and identify it. There are other places you can't point to what it is, but it might be lurking in there, which is as good as well. I also think Stella McCartney's done a great job, because she's been forced to be innovative, right? Her the ethics of the brand leave you very few choices. And so you go searching for the new ones, that's very admirable in my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting. Talking about Adidas, I interviewed one of the founders, Parley for the Oceans, who have famously done collaborations with Adidas. And, you know, he said very similarly to you, you know, everyone has been knocking on their door more and more recently. And they only want to work with brands who genuinely have a good track record and are not just you know, talking the talk. They're genuinely walking the walk, and Adidas definitely kind of fits there. Helen, can I come over to you at the moment? That, you know, new material formats, every kind of new material format, something that you've been tracking, you report on, you forecast. In this very sort of specific sustainable space, how long ago did you think, A, that the industry really needed to be thinking about it, and when did you see the tipping point?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I've been with WDSN for about 15 years. And obviously with a lot of our earlier forecasts, I did cast my mind back. And I think really from about 2010, we were surfacing up biomaterials and encompassing mushroom materials, algae. And it was just something where perhaps at that time we were sort of tracking more experimental prototypes, things that were coming out from people's, you know, kitchens and universities. But I think particularly over the last decade, it's been really interesting to see how this is starting to sort of scale up and ramp up. I think 2020 and 2021 seem to be a really significant year because we're seeing, you know, pilots getting more investment and, you know, seeing more just bigger plants being built, and really it really does start to feel like the dial is shifting, and particularly seeing products coming to the market. I mean, I was really interested actually in the Stella McCartney piece and also the Adidas sneaker. I think some products when you're doing a prototype are fairly seem a bit more straightforward, but when you've got a shoe or you've got a garment, obviously there must be some real challenges there when it comes to the durability of the material and the fact that it's something you actually wear rather than something you carry, such as a handbag. So, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? You can really see those iterations and refinements to really start to move towards, you know, real wearability.
Dan, tell us how much swearing went on behind the scenes to get those products looking as beautiful as they do.
It's more than we have time to talk about here. But what I will say is, you know, and we've said this before in other places, you know, we're north of 5,000 variants of Milo alone that we've worked through to get to where we are, and we're generating lots more every week. And, you know, we can look at them as learnings, we can look at them as failures, but, like, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And I, you know, one of the things I often reflect on is it feels like, I think if I was a super fan on the outside, it feels like it's taking forever. And on the inside, it's like, oh my God, we're doing so much work every day, we're making great progress, but it does seem to take forever. But it's like the normal pace of science. And it's a really interesting blend. And I think Helen, you've got it right in that you're starting to see products show up. You're starting to see it. We watch for our stuff at Bolt showing up in use cases where you're like, okay, this is getting serious. Like, no, nobody makes a shoe if you're not like real happy with a lot of the parts of it. And you're not going to launch a shoe if you're not really happy with where you're at on not just the material, but also, you know, the great bugaboo for this industry, for biomaterials in particular, is going to be scaling and providing it at the quantity the industry needs. Right, people are building bigger plants, but they're still teeny tiny compared to doing anything serious. I mean, what does Bolt make? We make like 50,000 square feet out of our pilot per year. It's like that's effectively nothing. Or building a facility that's going to do 2 million square feet a year will be done at the end of this year. That's still nothing. Like we're going to have this conversation for like the next decade, and I'll be like, oh, it's still too small. There's not enough capacity, and like because the industry is huge, just giant.
Helen, you use the word investment and that there is more investment coming. But for lots of brands, the blocker for a lot of this is, well, it's going to cost us so much more. We're going to have to put prices up. We'll lose consumers as a consequence. What are you advising them at the moment? And do you think there is the appetite from consumers to pay that bit more? Or are there ways brands need to be more creative about this?
I think that, I mean, I'm hoping with these kind of amazing innovations that there'll be an economy of scale eventually. And I think what's really interesting is seeing consortiums and big brands sort of investing in this type of thing. I think you'll start to perhaps generate the kind of the scale to kind of make it a little bit more widespread and working with slightly smaller brands. I suppose the thing is there is a shift in the consumer, and I think people do really want to know about materials more and more. And we are in this also this time of where I guess science and sort of brands and certifications and branded fibers are really coming into the consumer's psyche. So I think what's really interesting is when you start to see a science-based company, teaming up with a brand and creating a new branded product that's cutting edge and innovative, it does create some real excitement. It's a new way of looking at luxury, or a new way of looking at prestige, I suppose, which is fascinating. It's kind of science-based innovation, which is maybe a bit different to the designed products that we've seen before. There's more to it. So I think that if people understand the product and the sustainable credentials, and they feel that they are in some ways changing the planet by their spending and habits, and getting something really new and exciting, I think perhaps it will allow people to spend more. And I think also we've seen things like in fashion, there's that idea of made on demand, and that idea of waiting for products and things that are exclusive or different. So this is just, in a way, a more exciting version of that.
It's really interesting what you're saying about science, because although this isn't a podcast about the pandemic, we've done plenty of those, what we have seen in the last year is this shift in terms of who people trust. You know, scientists are now our global celebrities. We look to them for answers rather than the politicians, or, you know, even the celebrities who might have had an impact on what we were buying before. You know, we're trusting in different kinds of people. So I think there's quite an interesting angle as well. It'd be the scientists now who are, you know, leading us down the fashion path, maybe rather than those, you know, amazing creative directors who became household names. Dan, what's the most exciting thing that you guys are working on at the moment? What's the thing making your heartbeat faster and the team work harder?
I just wanted to echo something Helen said first there, which is, you know, if you rewind the clock 10 years ago, ingredient brands branded in materials, fibers, stuff was really out of phase with the market. It was really like, you know, we did that before, we don't like it. And I, at Bolt, coming in as outsiders, we really had a strategic thesis that it would be inevitable that that would shift, because if you go in a direction of sustainability, it's really hard to look at the product, and you've got this jadedness by consumers where they're like, I don't know if it is what you say it is. I kind of want a third party to validate it. And a scientist driven third party brand has, you know, turned out that the strategy was right, becomes the thing that does validate it. And I think consumers are going to prize that going forward. So at Bolt, Vision is working on a lot of things. Unfortunately, we're a startup, so we have to like constantly choose and focus. So right now, we effectively put all of our effort into almost all of our efforts going into making more Milo, because the demand is just, it's big. The shift is big. It's multimodal, because it's also in leather and leather alternatives. It's also driven by the change in how we're going to treat greenhouse gases around carbon in this planet, as well as the changes that are happening in food right now. On the production side that produces the hides that go into the leather industry. So, you know, it might be a little mundane, but I'm excited about making hundreds of millions of square feet of Milo and providing it to the industry at those economies of scale in a cost competitive way, so that, you know, massive brands can adopt this, still hit the margin targets they need to operate their businesses and be successful and do better for the planet. I'll tuck in one more thing here that I think is important. That you know, in the beginning, we tried to work with brands who had a strong tracker of sustainability. We thought they'd pull it forward. Over the long term, we believe sustainability needs to be in every brand. So we want Milo to work with anybody, even people who are like only half checked into this revolution. We want them using Milo because it's making the planet better in the long term. Now, over time, we've got our eye on lots of new materials. Like, we will do more over time. It's really a matter of when are we successfully competent to execute more than one thing at a time. We do a little bit of that right now. You can buy some skincare and some hair care products that have a spider silk based material in them, and that's the business that just keeps booming no matter how much I try to pretend that we should just focus on Milo. There's like this little business that could, little engine that could within Bolt, that is has some fabulous a small but fabulous team working on it, and I think it speaks to the broad-based nature of what's happening in consumer product. Right, people want animal free, they want sustainable, they want plastic free, and they want it in not just one thing, they want it in everything at once, which is a bit of a challenge for us, but it's a good challenge. And I get excited about it because it tells me that the original thesis, 10, 12 years ago, was correct. Like we were on the right track. You just had to be persistent, stick with it, and build a great company that can execute.
I think however you come into this journey, whether it's through food or fashion choices, once you've gone down one path, you feel that you need it everywhere. It feels very strange, and you're speaking to a Seagan here, so vegan but I do eat fish, although I watch Seaspiracy and now I'm very conflicted and lying awake at 2 a.m. every night. But, you know, once you've omitted all dairy products and all animal products, the thought of then having it hanging in your wardrobe or on your feet seems bizarre. You know, you've made a choice in one aspect of your life. So I am, you know, one of those converted, and you're seeking them out. And I think, you know, the fact that brands like you are out there and pioneering in this area is really exciting. Helen, have you got advice? We've got lots of designers who tune into this podcast who are very, very passionate about sustainability, but perhaps aren't at those forward-thinking companies. How can people start small? How can they start their own, you know, revolution where they're working?
It's a case of looking really honestly at your products and working out where you can make the most impact. I think that's one of the conversations we've had with lots of our customers. If they're working in, I mean, obviously I'm thinking more on a materials perspective, but if they're working primarily in one fibre, or that's a dominant fibre, that's where they can make the most impact. The other thing is just perhaps the other way around is not over relying on a particular product and fibre, because we're starting to realise that the fibre basket is really important. So sourcing from different crops, from different, you know, fibres, that's also really important to sort of think about biodiversity. And I think it's being quite incremental about how you make changes. I think, you know, we've talked to so many brands and suppliers from all different countries and regions and different market levels, and they all have the same challenge, which is to get more sustainable and to be transparent about their journey and just really, really focus, have a plan, and then try and start small and try and over deliver on that, because I think being authentic about what you do is going to be so important. I think the consumer of today wants transparency, they want validation, they really want to see companies committing to change and seeing it through.
Dan, I'll give the last word to you. We've talked about the amazing opportunity there. What are the biggest challenges though that you're coming up against? And this is sort of thinking about your brand and then how that, I guess, permeates the rest of the industry, because, you know, you've talked about the number of iterations you need to go through, how long real science innovation takes. What's the thing, I guess, which keeps you up at night?
There's two things I see today, which is the technology is marvelous and it can work. Like, you got the working example around you. It's 100% true that life on Earth, you can look at life on Earth and say, this all works. It's not a theoretical exercise. Like, you can find it. The challenge is, and the challenge is often not doing it in the lab. It's doing it at scale where you are big enough, cost competitive enough, still sustainable, still meeting the quality metrics. And unfortunately, that's hard. We don't have a lot of experience yet in the industry with it. And the ones that have any chance of making it are using vast sums of capital to get there. I mean, Bolt, what publicly available, we've raised north of $200 million. And, you know, we're going to need a lot more to go where we want to go. That's a vast sum of investment for, and many, you know, many of these small startups are sitting there and who have really interesting innovations are at the, you know, $2 million of seed funding kind of stage and are nowhere near delivering at scale that can impact this industry. And so that's maybe the thing that keeps me up at night is, like, you know, Bolt self-servingly is great. Like, everyone come work with us. We'll do a capsule. We'll help those little innovators who want to make that first bit of change. We'll do it with Milo and it's going to be great. Or B-Silk or whatever material, and we'll point you to the right people. But there's a lot of folks who have really great innovations that are so far from getting there because of the limitation of expertise at scale and capital to get there. And that scares me on how fast the whole industry can change relative to the aspirations to change.
And to be honest, one of the things that we have from our brands and our subscribers is when we are presenting all these amazing innovations, they kind of say, well, when is it going to be for me? Or when should I be looking at this? When can I get hold of this? So, you know, for us, it's really important at WGSN to build context around this and kind of keep the dialogue and show the iterations and show when it's scaling and just kind of report on the progress of different innovations, just so that it can give our subscribers a sense of, you know, how these things are evolving and when it might be appropriate for them at their price point, their market level.
Dan, Helen, we've run out of time. Thank you so much. That was absolutely fascinating. Dan, as I said, preaching to the absolute converted, I think what you're doing is amazing. We can't wait for it to hit mass. But in the meantime, all those very lucky people who've managed to get those their hands on those beautiful trainers and that gorgeous Stella McCartney collection, I'm very, very jealous.
There's a few more things on the way. You might be surprised in the quarters to come.
Stay tuned.
I've got my Google alerts set up now, so
stay tuned.
We'll not be caught out next time. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Dan and Helen, and to you all for listening. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please subscribe to the show, which is available on all major podcast platforms. And if you really liked what you heard, then please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. If you're interested in what we've been talking about today, then please head over to wgsn.com, where you can find out how you can get access to all of our insight and analysis. We're constantly publishing new reports about how we can all design a better, brighter future for our industry. So thank you again to Dan, to Helen, and I'd also like to thank our podcast producers, Roland Bodenham and Bethan Ryder. And thank you again for listening.